I'm going to ruthlessly pursue economic equity via the empowerment of virtues-driven business owners. And I'm willing to trade business. Like, if that means that I'm going to make 20% less, worth it 100 times over, and I'm willing to trade that. But the irony of all of this is that when people hear that, they want to work with me, right? Like, they people are like, oh, hell yeah, I'm on board.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Alex Zerbicki. He is an investor. He is a business owner. He's a founder. He's just a really smart dude. But he is the founder of Modus and a recovering finance professional. I think we're all recovering from finance professionals. he's only interested in helping those who will help others. He loves long walks on the beach, which is nice, and speculative mathematics. So maybe we'll figure out a way to bring that in. But welcome to the show, Alex.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to talk more about the speculative math than the long walks on the beach, but both are good.
Both are good. And sometimes I would imagine you're contemplating and you're doing like math proofs in your head whilst on the beach. That's just a good time to let the brain expand and ponder. Or you end up looking like that GIF where someone's like puzzled and then all like the like math symbols are flying out at them. So whoever is listening, whichever person you are, this should be fun. Well, tell me, Alex, what is on your mind?
So many things, but mainly I've been thinking about and infatuated with the fact that a lot of business leaders, for-profit and nonprofit, they feel like there is a trade-off between virtues and profits/returns, right? The rhetoric is, I can either pursue what I want to pursue or I can make money. And that is a fallacy. That trade-off is a fallacy. And I spend a lot of time telling people that they need to shatter that paradigm in their head.
That'll preach. So we this may be turned into a mini series or something like the Joe Rogan Experience. And we're going to be here for 3 hours. We'll invite Terrence Howard to join us later in the program. But
I'm sure he's got
tell me. So, I mean, you've already sort of said what the current thinking or the prevailing wisdom is. But where do you think that sort of thinking of I've either got to do something of value and that is maybe virtuous or altruistic or whatever term somebody wants to use, or make profits and have a healthy, thriving business. Where is that rooted?
Where's it rooted? This is 100% my opinion, by the way. This is not data, but in my opinion, it's rooted in shareholder theory. So the fact that the American economy, capitalism, which is great, by the way, I am not anti-capitalist, but the American economy, the capitalist economy, is rooted in maximizing profit to go to your shareholders, I think, is the limiting belief that started this. People feel like their own interests are superseded by that of profit and that of shareholder returns, even if you're not a publicly traded company. But everybody in capitalism follows the publicly traded companies, right? Like they set the pace for the entire economy. So we're all in this era of like having hard-ons for these business magnates, and they're probably not living their truth. Some are. I'm not here to attack anybody, but it's this kind of derivative thinking from that all the way down to middle market, small market, micro market, nonprofit market. And I spend a lot of time questioning the assumptions of the people that I talk to around this topic. If you were to pivot and go in this, you know, ethos, like heart-centered, purpose-driven direction, what would happen? And when you really get to tangibly talking about that with folks, it's pretty easy to pull apart those assumptions a lot of the time. And they're rooted in nothing more but, I don't know, internet rhetoric.
Yeah, or the latest entrepreneur Forbes magazine article that is, you know, putting this the CEO, founder, or executive up on a pedestal. And do I think that we should be learning from those that are seeing a high degree of financial success in their enterprise? 100%. I think that there's something that we can learn from everybody. But do I think that we should go, oh, well, that worked for them, therefore it'll absolutely 100% work for me. And not only will it work, but that is the way I should be thinking about it. I should be doing it. That it's almost a form of indoctrination.
Great word.
I went to college for these sort of words. Yeah. My dad would be proud right now. Speech communication, everybody. It's the future.
And the past.
So, in the past, yeah. What do you mean about oral tradition? Is that like brushing your teeth, like oral B? No, it's not. It's storytelling, friend. So when we're thinking about all these things that trickle down, one of the problems I have with it, in addition to what you've said, and maybe these are tied together, is, you know, like, for instance, we're recording this a day or two after Apple's annual iPhone release. Now, those are like little micro holidays for me. I'm an Apple fanboy. I love the products and the ecosystem. That being said, there's so many people who would look to, well, how is Apple doing it? And I was like, you're making $500,000 a year. Your problems, your scenarios, your environment is nothing like theirs. That doesn't mean you can't be inspired by them. But I think when we look at these publicly traded companies, which are typically very large, but they are in the minority. If let's just take the U.S. Breakdown of businesses is, and I forget what the exact numbers are, but I want to say it's what, like 80 to 90% of all businesses in the U.S. qualify as a small business, right?
Yep.
So our problems and our challenges and our whatever we need to do are not the same as theirs. And do you think that that's part of us conflating that, like, all business is the same and we should all be doing the exact same things at the exact same time and only doing those things that maybe the top 1% wealthiest companies are doing?
So I think what you're saying is absolutely true. The economies of scale apply mm-hmm. to business practices. What else? I'm a big pluralist, so I believe more than one thing can be true here. And I think what's also mm-hmm. true is that Steve Jobs and the genesis of Apple was rooted in uncompromising ethos and values. They were like, we will build this company on innovation and we will sacrifice all else. That's a hell of a trade. And so,
yeah.
Like the... Should we be looking at what they're doing for success? Sure. But at the heart of that, it's Steve Jobs knew who he was and he knew who his company needed to be in terms of culture and people. And mm-hmm. he shamelessly, ruthlessly pursued that. And I think that's a big part of why Apple was successful in the first place. And mm-hmm. it's an example of why I'm so resolute in my belief that following the values is the way. It's not either or. It's you have to start from and stay at that heart center. Now, some people's values are downright rotten. there are some businesses and business leaders that are just doing some bad stuff out there. And it's our mm-hmm. job as hopefully critically thinking, independent business leader folk to kind of read between the lines, right? Like it is.
Yeah.
Did this company get rich by doing large scale tax evasion or by gouging the wages of their employees? I'm not saying Apple did that. I'm just speaking in general, but like did this company that I'm reading about do stuff that's really messed up to get their success? And if the answer is yes, then why the hell are we even talking about anything else that has to do with that company? Like we
right.
burned down.
Right. And this is where in a lot of my discussions with clients, with prospects, is a lot about balancing that purpose with performance. And for a lot of them that are, like you said, those heart-centered, more purpose-driven individuals, whether you're for-profit or nonprofit. I'm in I run a for-profit company. You run a for-profit company. But I would say that we're purpose-driven, and not too dissimilar from Steve Jobs in the sense of clarity of ethos and identity and those sort of things. So I think if we can, to use a term that apparently is only prevalent in the South, but chew up the meat, spit out the bone of, we don't have, being values-driven doesn't mean that we have to adopt somebody else's values because they reached a level of success. Is it's not Steve Jobs's values that led to necessarily to Apple's success, but the fact that he was crystal clear on those values, and as you said, ruthlessly adhered to them, to where they actually impacted, infiltrated, and were integrated in every action he took. It's that led to the performance side of things. And what I hear you saying is too many people have either tried to falsely adopt someone else's identity that isn't their own, or they're chasing performance of somebody else, but it's totally detached from who they are, and they wonder why they're not getting the ROI that they expect for their level of effort.
Correct. Absolutely correct. And shareholder theory, which I mentioned earlier, it holds profit above all else. So shareholder theory says chase profit ahead of employee well-being, customer well-being, personal and professional values, right? Like, when it comes down to it, profit reigns supreme in that model. And the thinking is, do everything you can within the bounds of law to maximize profit. And if we really get down to the nitty gritty there, that means we trade stuff for profit. And I think that too many people don't realize that profit and returns should be a positive outcome. That should be a positive externality, but it should be the focal point. If I say, what's your infinite pursuit? What is the thing that you will pursue always in the business world? What would you say?
For me?
Yes, you.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe we were just asking the general listener. I was like, we may be waiting here a while to hear them respond. Unless you're like Superman, you can hear. Yeah. I mean, mine at a very high level is going to be impact. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, with that, if we're just putting this into the context of business, is going to be significant and positive impact on kids from hard places.
Amazing. That has no finite timeline on it. That has no numeric benchmark on it. That is just, you can't save all the kids, but you're going to run in that direction, and damn it, you're going to save as many as you can for as long as your ticket, right? That is an infinite pursuit. Profit, returns, scale, growth, those are not infinite pursuits. Those are finite pursuits, and businesses need both. So like for me, I want to create economic equity by empowering virtuous business leaders to win the game of capitalism. I'm going to do that as long as I've got air in my lungs. But I have finite pursuits too, right? Do I want to make a certain amount of income and have a certain amount of clients next year? Absolutely. You need both. Like, we have to do both. And the problem with the shareholder theory, and part of why the current thinking is limited on this, is that people say that our mission is 10 million in revenue. Our purpose is 10 million in revenue. It's not. That's false. That's a non-compelling, that's not an infinite pursuit. Our infinite pursuit should be something else. And then along the way, we want to get 10 million in revenue or 1,000 clients or whatever the thing is.
Right. I have a lot of clients when I'm working with them. And as a matter of fact, I was running a workshop for a CEO group and was just doing like a short version of what normally is a 2-day experience. And we come to this place of what in System and Soul, in that framework, we call the destination statement. It's not meant to be necessarily the infinite pursuit, but it is that sort of like, if we pick up a stick, we throw it a long ways away. It's that long-term, that 10-year, that big thing. And I had them all write it down. And this one guy, he was a VP, and he said, well, we want to be a $100 million company. I go, great. Why? He's like, and he happened to be the VP of sales. So that made sense. I said, okay, what's significant about that? He goes, well, because that's more than we're making now. And I was like, okay, that's great. I have no problem with you making more money or making $100 million or $1 billion. I said, but why does that matter? He goes, oh, well, I guess if we had profit, you know, more profit, we could invest more back into the people and everything. Because I was asking, I was like, why does your frontline worker care about you being a $100 million company? And what I come back to is this phrase that my coach shares a lot of times is, as business owners or even business leaders, like you could lead a department, a division or something like that and still lead from this place, even if those around you don't, is we've got to create a story where everybody can find their role in it. Because when we talk about it's got to be 10 million in revenue, or we're going to be a 30% margin, or we're going to do this. Well, typically that's really only interesting to the executive suite, to
the shareholder,
to shareholders, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's only if you're public, right? Like to those shareholders, if you have a board, right. And whether or not they're taking distributions or anything like that. Then that's important, but that's not compelling. It's not motivating. Now, he happened to have a colleague in the room who was catching what I was throwing out, and she talked about being a $100 million woman-owned company, and I was like, okay, well, that's interesting. Let's talk about that. It's there was some significance. It was a family-owned business. It had been handed down, and it was owned by her father. And I was like, okay, well, that's cool, because you want to create some significance for women executives and it was in a manufacturing space, which obviously, you know, the vast majority of CEOs and owners are not female. And I was like, okay, that's something significant. You want to show other females, you want to show I think they have at least one little girl, the CEO. She wants to set this example of, look, you can go and do and build something that is huge, and you can try to take care of people, and you can do it in a space that maybe isn't historically female owned. I was like, if you're chasing that, then let's get on board. Like, let's do that. That's compelling. That's, you know, I'm sure that there's some finite isms about that. Mm-hmm. So I hear a lot of what you're saying, where shareholder theory is an either or. And there are trade-offs. I talk to people about that all the time in coaching. I'm sure you do too, especially if you're getting into the world of finances. You can't spend all of your money on this and this equally. Like, there's not an infinite amount of cash or capital. There's trade-offs everywhere. But I hear you saying something, and maybe you can help me and the listeners reconcile this, of if we're saying that there are trade-offs, how do we have a both and mentality, which is what I hear you saying? How do you balance trade-offs with both and thinking?
Mm-hmm. Great question. And I think it's the mental dilemma behind everything we're talking about here. The trade-off should be, I guess, part of the ethos and the awareness. So Zuckerberg's a great example of this, right? Their mantra when they were scared, like, for what it's worth, I don't really care about Facebook or Zuck, but like, he's built a really big business. One of the things he said was, their mantra during their scale was move fast and break things. And somebody asked him about that, and he was like, if you're going to lay out your mission statement for your company, and you say, we want to be the highest quality and the best customer service and the fastest and the most economic and the blah, 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 that's aspirational. It's garbage. But if you lay out your vision and you are going to say in your vision or your mission, whichever one, what you're willing to trade for the thing you want to accomplish, that's compelling. It's true. So he didn't say we want to move fast enough to maximize speed without breaking anything. That's not compelling. That's not interesting. He said, we are going to move fast at the cost of breaking things when that happens, right? Like we're willing to incur the cost of doing stuff wrong to prioritize speed. And then if we take the central message with disregard, move fast and break things. But if we take the central method message and say, I want to take a women-owned business to $100 million, like you're the person in your workshop, what are you willing to trade for that? It means that number one, we probably have to change the way that we think about the ownership and who the shareholders are. But it also means we probably have to think about who we hire. And the people, everybody we hire is probably going to need to be compelled by that message. Like, all right, I love women-owned businesses personally. Like I think the culture is notably different and stronger a lot of the time. And I would love, like Kendra Scott, I don't care about jewelry. Like I could not care less about that industry, but she's out there. She built a billion-dollar business in a competitive market where, women live in there, but she won that game. And that's really compelling to me. And so bringing this back to trade-offs versus either or, if you say we are going to ruthlessly pursue for me, right? I'm going to ruthlessly pursue economic equity via the empowerment of virtue-driven business owners. And I'm willing to trade business. Like if that means that I'm going to make 20% less, where my book's going to be 20% less smaller, worth it. Worth it 100 times over, and I'm willing to trade that. But the irony of all of this is that when people hear that, they want to work with me, right? Like they people are like, oh, hell yeah, I'm on board, right? And so the irony, the reconciliation of the trade-off and the both and thinking is profits will come if you ruthlessly pursue what's right for you. If you do it right and you execute, profits will come. And I'm not here to say, I'm not prosperity gospel. I'm not saying it's all going to work out, but I am saying that the most notable returns come from businesses and individuals who ruthlessly pursued whatever that value statement is at the cost of something else. And then they got both.
Mm-hmm. Right. But it wasn't even necessarily pursuing both. It was correct. It was the first thing led to it was the big domino that got pushed, and people think, no, skip all these dominoes. I just want this last one right here. And you just keep pushing and pushing and pushing, and it never falls over. Whereas if you would push over identity, the infinite thinking, you know, kind of like Simon Sinek's The Infinite Game, all those things, like if you push that domino over, then the other dominoes that you're wanting will get pushed over. Most people aren't connecting the through line of those things. And understanding that you might be leaving some money on the table. And would you be okay with that? Because I think, you know, money, and I know other people have different relationships to money, and that's fine. Money is the most tangible measurement of, I'm going to say, of scale. I don't think it's of success, because you could screw people over all day long, like you said, is grow unethically. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, you could operate inside the bounds of ethics, like you mentioned, but then you get into the battle of ethics versus morality. Like, is it a ethically and morally sound decision? Like, it may be legally an okay, an acceptable thing, but morally or socially, was it the right thing to do? Like ethically, you could never give a return on things, on products that are defective or whatever. Like maybe you had it all in the fine print and lawyerized your way into something. But were you doing right by your customers or your clients or anything? And you say no, well, then that's where you tread into this weird ground. Something you said about those trade-offs made me think of, and I don't know where it got started, but it's like you can have, somebody had put it up in their store. It's like you can have it fast, cheap, or good, and you only get to pick two of them.
Yep.
Right? And I think it's number one, coming to terms, what I hear you saying is coming to terms with that reality. number one. It's just, you can't be everything all the time, especially early on. You just do not have the resources. Mm-hmm. But two is not just accepting that reality, is not just saying that is reality, but two, saying, and you know what, that trade-off is the one that I am okay and willing to make. Mm-hmm. Like I understood having, you know, we were talking about, I don't know if we had recorded this, but you know, talking about I have kids, and you were saying, well, I'm not a parent yet, but I can imagine these things as, well, I've chosen to have like five kids in the house. Therefore, I have accepted that I will not have fun. No, I'm just kidding.
Sleep, baby. But, won't sleep, baby.
Yeah, sleep. Yeah. But I've accepted that means that I'm probably, at least for right now, I'm not going to have like the nicest car. I'm not going to have the cleanest house. I'm not going to have the least complex schedule out there, and there's a lot of control I'm not going to have. But because part of mine and my wife's ethos within our family of doing hard things and loving kids from hard places and doing things like that has meant that, not in addition to our three bio kids, we fostered 18 kids, we adopted two kids, we've brought chaos into the home and said, we're okay with this trade-off because of what is true to us, which I love that you're using the word ruthless. Like, that resonates with me. Other people may choose to interpret that as you could be ruthlessly authentic, which actually, in my opinion, speaks to the term integrity, which I normally steer people away from when they're choosing their core values. Is like, we value honesty and integrity. Well, I sure as hell hope so. Yep. Like, you're not going to value dishonesty and two-facedness, mm-hmm. but integrity, meaning really being of one, like there is an alignment between word and action. And I hear you saying, like, there is a ruthless adherence to the integrity of who you are and what you do.
Yeah. And why you do it.
And it sounds like that's what you are not just advocating for, but also the way in which you're choosing to engage with these business owners. And I'd be curious, in saying that, on the surface, I can't imagine a single person going, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard, Alex. Who in the hell wants to do that? Everybody, even those who don't operate that way, would probably be, yeah, absolutely. That's a great thing. You know, they're probably virtue signaling, but that's amazing. But if everybody was doing that, it would take all of the sort of the teeth and the urgency out of your mission. So what is this way of thinking? What is it costing people? And then what is the bridge you are helping these people to cross that may give lip service to that level of ruthless integrity or authenticity, but they're not crossing it for whatever reason. And maybe they want to. Mm-hmm.
Great question. What's it costing people? It's costing them gray hair and stress. Yeah, totally. And again, I for what it's worth, I think you're living in integrity, but it is really stressful to live in like the ruthlessly profit-seeking world, right? Like, It's hard. Mm-hmm. And you see mm-hmm. people, you know, even the people who win the game of capitalism, like you see a lot of them got a lot of gray hair, got a lot of dark circles under their eyes. They don't want to do it super long. Like being a CEO of Fortune 500 companies, super hard. So what it's costing them, in my opinion, can't be measured in money unless you wanted to go down like the healthcare and, you know, self-work type of budget thing. But it's mm-hmm. more qualitative and it's more felt, but more importantly, how to bridge the gap. Being ruthlessly profit seeking is squashing everything that stands in your way of making money. Being ruthlessly values driven is questioning your own assumptions and stories that you tell yourself. Right. So if you say we value integrity and honesty, great. Look in the mirror and tell yourself without anybody around, how do you do that? Like, if is that a guiding light in your organization? Do you, if you screw, and this is not you, but like in general, if you screw up with a customer or an account and your employee or team member comes to you and says, what should I do? And you say, throw it up. Why? Do you really value integrity and honesty? Like, is that written in? Or do you say, hey, go wear that. Go own it. Take responsibility. Give up, like, stand in that moment and say, I was wrong. We were wrong. We messed up. And, you know, we're going to do our best to make it up to you, but like, we really appreciate it if you like took a discount and we could like continue this. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're not questioning your assumptions and you're not questioning the stories that you're telling yourself and others, you can't build this thing outward. It lives in there with you and the stories that you tell yourself.
Maybe we just found the title of the episode, Ruthlessly Values Driven. I love that. Maybe we'll title that as a course. But I think that there are, man, there's so many different directions I want to take this, because some of it is hitting on some conversations outside of this that I've been having with people. The founding pastor of the church I go to has said many times, and so it's lodged in my head, is that squeezing a tube of toothpaste does not create the toothpaste. It simply reveals what's inside.
Great, great metaphor.
And what I hear you saying is, when we get squeezed, it's not if, it's when we get squeezed in business, are we still willing to be ruthlessly values driven and adhere to these things and understand the trade-off even in those more painful moments that we didn't choose? Because those are different. And I think that there could be a part two on contrasting those. If someone is listening and they say, hey, I want to be this way. I want to live this way. I want to operate my business or department this way. What's the first step, a baby step someone can take in the next 24 hours, little to no money, to make progress towards this way of living?
Absolutely. Write down somewhere your infinite pursuit, your finite pursuits, your personal and professional values, and then how your operating method, whatever that might be, informs or doesn't all of the ethos elements. Like, if everything that you do is aligned with your ethos, that's awesome. It's probably not, and that's okay. Be kind to yourself, but question if those things are aligned. And if they're not, spend some time reflecting on what you're willing to trade to get them aligned. And if you're really clear on those elements, you can make a lot of progress really quickly without any technical stuff or platforms or anything like that, because you will have clarity of vision in mind.
I love that. That is simple, maybe difficult to confront, but simple to do. If people want to know more about you, more about Modus, like, where should they be connecting with you and finding those things out?
Yeah. Thank you. Best place is on LinkedIn. Search my name, get on LinkedIn and check me out. I talk about this stuff quite a lot, and feel free to send me a message. I'm happy to pontificate further.
And we'll make sure that that's all linked up in the show notes. Well, Alex, thank you so much for being a guest. I hope it's not the last time. I think we got a lot more to talk about that would be helpful to those virtues-driven people. For those listeners, we appreciate you. We hope you were entertained, but we also hope that you learned a little something and that you're going to do something different. If this was impactful for you, I'd appreciate or rate, like, subscribe, whatever the right button is on your platform of choice. One, gives me feedback. I want to make this as valuable as I possibly can for you. I enjoy doing this, but ultimately I'm here to make sure that this is valuable. The other thing is, you can make this easier for some other leader that is on their own journey, that is trying to figure things out. You can make this easier for them to find. You never know what conversation is going to unlock another leader's next step in their journey. And that's a free and easy way to pay it forward and make a dent in the universe. But until next time, change the way you think to change the way you lead. We'll see you.